We welcome you to KGVM, Gallatin Community Radio, and to the Health and Happiness Show. Our thanks to the Public Education Committee of the Montana Psychological Association and Kiyoshi Matsuyama also for his creative music to introduce the program, and to Bob Wall, our station engineer and computer guru. Today's show has strong importance for Bozeman and Montana, as well as national and international implications. I am Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, and my co-host, Dr. Suzanne Wood, will now introduce the topic and our guests.
I'll begin with a question. Why do we want refugees? Is it good for us? From the American Immigration Council, across the country, refugees have reshaped many communities in a fundamental way. In Fargo, North Dakota, our neighbor here, large-scale employers like the glass manufacturer Cardinal IG and rural health provider Sanford Health say they could not have successfully sustained and expanded operations without the refugee workers. In Minneapolis, Somali refugees have become such an integral part of the city's business and cultural landscape that one now represents the area in the U.S. Congress. And in Buffalo, New York, the refugee renaissance has been credited with reversing decades of population decline and turning neighborhoods abandoned by the exodus of factory work into areas that are now safe and lively. These are just a few examples of very real ways in which refugees affect not just our society, but also our local economy. It might be of interest to add that one candidate currently running for president is the child of immigrants. Some of the key findings from the American Immigration Council were that refugees earned a collective $93.6 billion in household income last year. They also contributed $25 billion in taxes. And then they had almost $69 billion in disposable income that they use at U.S. businesses. Well, what happens after refugees arrive? Refugees here for 5 years or less have become a median household income of roughly $30,500. By the time they've been in the country for 20 years, their median household income reaches $71,400, which is even $4,300 more than the median income of U.S. households. They begin businesses. Nearly 188,000 refugee entrepreneurs began in 2019. That means that 13% of our new refugees started a new business, more than only 9% of the U.S. population born. In doing that, they generated another $5.1 billion in business income. And they've made wonderful impact in several states. They have $1 billion in spending power, $20 billion in California, and $5 billion in Texas. What happens, though, after they've been here a while? What do those refugees do? Actually, after they've been in here 20 years and you check back, 89.9% have become citizens of our nation, and their home ownership rate is 65.7. They become integral, wonderful parts of our nation. In an era where a country faces demographic challenges, where by 2040, 21.6% of our population will be 65 or older, and 85 and older will double. The new refugees coming in are going to take over and provide for those people who've aged out of the workforce. An estimated 78% of those refugees are within working age. So all of this bespeaks the positive nature of refugees, and we have with us today persons who work daily to enhance the life of refugees and thereby our lives. And so we want to welcome those folks. To begin, we'd like to welcome Mary Poole, who only has a few minutes to be with us. Mary, tell us about your work, the agency with whom you work, and what you do on a daily basis.
You bet. Thanks so much for having me on. I am the executive director of Soft Landing Missoula, and Soft Landing Missoula is a local grassroots nonprofit in Missoula, Montana. We've been around for about 8.5 years now, and we started as a group of parents, community members, thinking, is there something more that our city can be doing to help welcome refugees? You'll hear from other folks in Missoula who are doing some of this great work with us. And so we work with refugee families every day, providing all sorts of supports here in Missoula, Montana.
Well, fantastic. We thank you for your work and efforts. And we know how badly Montana could use more workers. So what you're doing is right in the asset column for Montana, Mary.
Yeah, and I would just add, you know, I think all of the things that you mentioned and all the numbers and statistics and ideas that you talked about, they're extremely important part of the conversation of welcoming refugees. My personal effort and those around me here in Missoula was really born out of more of a need for reciprocity and the beautiful life that we have been given and born into, and realizing that there are others in the world that were not born into the same fortune as us. And if there is something that we can do to be helpful, then we should do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And tell us a little bit about what Soft Landing actually does, some of the specifics, Mary.
Yeah, we run a walk-in community center that's open for folks to walk in all day. People come in with all sorts of questions, maybe about a piece of mail they received that they're not understanding. They come in to get connected with community members that have offered up their time to provide mentorship for them, whether that's studying for English or studying for their citizenship exam, working on different professional certifications. We provide an avenue for refugees and people here in Missoula to work together on those things. We have a youth program where we work with over 150 refugee and immigrant kids, providing support mostly for middle school, high schoolers, and college students. And then we also run a program called United We Eat, which utilizes the amazing culinary skills and delicious food of refugees and immigrants to provide kind of a cultural bridge for our community to experience and learn more about them.
That all sounds exemplary.
It's pretty fun. We have probably one of the most amazing and biggest lessons I've learned in this work, coming to it from a place where I was watching families in so much distress and wanting to know how I could help. I never thought that work would actually be as joyful as it is. And there's joy in every day and celebration and in every single day of my life. So that's been just amazing and wonderful.
It seems to me it must be a total triumph to bring a person from desperate, unsafe circumstances to a safe and doable everyday life.
Yeah, I mean, I think the joy is just getting to meet people and realizing like how similar we all are and how a lot of our values are the same and we hold the same aspirations for life, and the opportunity that we have here provides, you know, room for someone to grow in that way. So that it is pretty exciting.
Yes, certainly. Maybe tell us about how many refugees are in your community, and maybe tell us a little bit about them.
I have to to run. I'm sitting outside my kids' school right now, and they just got out, so I have to pick them up. But we work with over 500 refugees and immigrants from 30 different countries.
Wow.
So.
Fantastic. Well, we really thank you for being with us. Yes. And we understand you have to go.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
No, it was great to hear about your work. Thank you, Mary. And moving right along, we have others with us that are in this same effort. We have Marty Albini. Marty, welcome.
Well, thank you.
Tell us about your work and where you operate and what you do, please, Marty.
I work with a group called Gallatin Refugee Connections. We're in Gallatin County. Our mission is education, advocacy, and direct help for refugees. We don't directly resettle refugees, but we do support efforts of those who are. Mary and Eamon in Missoula, and Lutheran Family Services in Billings, which is just starting this year.
So you help to coordinate all of these much-needed services?
No, our goal is to provide physical goods. We provide household goods.
Okay.
So we have a collection drive every year, which is coming up on March 23rd, where we solicit donations of household goods to equip the refugees when they get here. And we pack that all up and send it on its way.
And so we depend on our community to help donate these items. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
So just for those listeners out there who might like to help with this effort, could you give us an idea of what they could donate, where they would bring it? Just give us a little nutshell there, perhaps.
Sure. It's a long list of what we need, because basically a refugee arrives with nothing. And when we set up, when folks in Missoula and Billings set up a household, they have to provide everything from sheets on the bed to soap in the bathroom and things like that. So we collect a list of goods. It's provided for us by the State Department, and it's broken up into kits, and the kits are based on rooms in the house. So there's a bathroom kit and a bedding kit and three kitchen kits. And the lists for those kits are available on our website. And there's a number of places around town that have posters up with printed lists of the kits.
Oh, great, Marty.
And you don't have to, when people donate, they don't have to donate an entire kit. They can just give one item if they like. And we'll assemble all that on kit packing day on March 23rd.
Could you give us that website or that connection? And then
sure.
we might ask you for it again toward the end here.
No worries. It's the longest website name you'll ever see. GallatinRefugeeConnections.org.
Okay. GallatinRefugeeConnections.org. Okay, but it is straightforward, even though it's long. Okay.
Yeah, you can also find us through Facebook.
And so once you collect these on March 23rd, then you send them on to Eamon and Sarah and Mary for their direct outreach to the families.
Yes, and this year also to Billings.
Okay. So the place where we have the most refugees right now would be Missoula and Billings and where else?
Well, the two places that are authorized to resettle refugees are Missoula, which has been authorized since 2016, and Billings, which is just starting this year.
Okay.
So Billings is just going to see its first refugees this month.
And how does a community get qualified?
That's a very long process, and I think I'd defer to Eamon on that, or Sarah.
Sure.
They can give you a much more detailed look at what that is.
Absolutely.
We tried it in Bozeman, but events got in the way of us resettling refugees here in Bozeman. So we decided we would concentrate on supporting the efforts that were already ongoing.
I hear you. Well, that brings us to introducing Sarah Howerton, who's with us today. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. Hi. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, welcome. Welcome. And tell us a little bit about what you do and where you're located, Sarah.
You bet. So I work with the International Rescue Committee office in Missoula, and I'm the development manager there. And as kind of Marty and and Mary have alluded to, so that the IRC is now one of two agencies in the state of Montana who have a cooperative agreement with the government to resettle refugees in our respective communities. In my capacity as a development manager, I oversee sort of our volunteer programs, our community outreach, donations and collecting them, that sort of thing. I'll let Eamon maybe talk a little bit more about the nitty-gritty facts of resettlement and our specific programs in Missoula.
Great. Eamon, welcome.
Hello. Good to be with you again.
Well,
and your listeners as well.
We welcome you. And this is Eamon Fahey. And could you tell us what your position is and about the work that you do, Eamon?
Yes. So I am the director of the International Rescue Committee office in Missoula. And I've been in this role for 3 years and now oversee a staff of about 35. And again, what we do is resettle refugees in our community in Missoula.
Excellent. Yes. And I would like for perhaps each of you to kind of tell us a little bit about how the community has responded to your programs and to the refugees coming in.
Sure.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sarah. I knew we were all going to start talking at the same time.
Of course.
I'd say from my perspective and my experience, the overwhelming response in Missoula has been very positive. I think our community is committed to sort of responding, like what Mary was talking about earlier, to this call to action. If we can do something, then we should. And the amount of people globally displaced right now, it just surpassed 120 million, if I'm not mistaken. Unprecedented numbers, unprecedented times. And that as human beings from person to person, I believe it's a collective responsibility to all pitch in and do what we can do to help. And I feel that very much from the Missoula community as well.
Yes, and I think it's glorious that there's this wonderful effort underway to help all of those people who are being displaced across the world and have felt hopeless in their current situation. And just imagine the hope that they can have by coming here. Kind of overwhelming to think about the difference that you all are creating in many lives. And so I would like to ask Marty, have you started actually with the drive? Are you having a good community response?
The drive is underway. We've already got some donations made. And yeah, when people hear about this, what we're up to, the response can be pretty tremendous. Every year we fill up a large truck and sometimes a truck and trailer with the donated items. And that comes about like one donation at a time. So the community response has been really tremendous.
So a question comes to my mind: when you're donating things for a kitchen or a bedroom, say, what if you have 10 really good sheets in your linen closet, but they have been used, but they're still in perfect shape. You just got a different sized bed. Can that be donated, or is it only new items that can be donated?
Some we can accept used items, kitchenware, pots and pans, things like that. Some items have to be new, and bedding, unfortunately, is one of them. There's some concern about bed bugs and such. So all of the bedding we accept has to be new. But other than that, we accept an awful lot of thrift store items and used equipment, used household goods.
What about furniture? Is that on the list as well?
It isn't. We don't really have capacity to store it or to transport it. It just takes too much room.
Okay, I hear you. So
we concentrate on small items that fit into a clear plastic tub.
Okay, so that's the Bozeman effort. But I'm sure that Sarah and Eamon, how do you acquire the furniture needed?
Yeah, so we definitely do accept, gently used furniture. I think when people are starting over, we try to make sure that, we're giving them a dignified experience. And so gently used couches, for example, as long as there's no rips, stains, tears, or odors, we can totally accept it new. But yeah, we get a lot of furniture donations from the community. And when we come up short, when we don't have enough to furnish a home just from donations, we actually received a cash grant this last year from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints that enables us to purchase the furniture furnishings for homes. And that's been a huge game changer for us.
That's fantastic. And just imagine the joy of you all setting up a house and making it all cozy, and then those people being able to arrive in that home. Tell us about that process.
Yeah, I think both Eamon and I have been a part of what we sort of call them internally. It's a home setup. That's the activity where our staff that is dedicated to all things housing will kind of round up the furniture needed, and a group of us will get together and set up the house. And it's a pretty fun experience, just imagining what it would be like to step into that home for the first time. And we're usually not there when the clients or the people that we're serving are brought to the home for the first time. But yeah, Eamon, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I will just add, yeah, it's one of the most gratifying things about this work, and sort of taking it back to, what you all do in Gallatin County through Gallatin Refugee Connections. This work is a culmination of, not only our organization, but a whole community, and not only a whole community, but a whole state in some ways. So this home setup is sort of is the end product of that. Marty and the work that he's describing, this drive, that's sort of the beginning of some of this. And another really gratifying thing is sometime in late March, April, whenever they deliver, a U-Haul full of tubs of, various kits. And as Marty mentioned, oftentimes a trailer too. That's also this really exciting time where, it's just amazing to see, people contributing and the end product is those home setups when we're making the beds with these with the sheets and setting up the kitchen, putting dishes away and cupboards and everything. I think it's a great example of the work that we do, but also the fact that this work we certainly can't do it alone. And that's one of the gratifying things about this work too, is that it does. We're standing shoulder to shoulder with others to do this work, including with our good friends at Soft Landing as well.
Excellent. As these people arrive, and they get to go into a well set up home and have that comfort and joy. But tell us about some of the jobs that they provide for the community, for the workforce. What do you see happening in general with the jobs that they take?
Yeah, and Suzanne, I want to just take a little aside, and I loved your introductory remarks. Thank you so much about, again, what refugees contribute. This is, economic contribution, but there was just a study done by the Office of or the Congressional Office of Budget or Budgetary Office that was talking about not just refugees, but the surge of immigrants we've had since the COVID pandemic. That has resulted, if those numbers are maintained for the next 10 years, the contribution to the economy is $7 trillion with a T, dollars, $1 trillion in taxes, again, over the next 10 years. One of the ways, again, that refugees and other immigrants contribute is by working. That's one of the things that, as a refugee resettlement agency, we connect refugees, newly arrived folks who arrived as refugees, with employment. That employment is often in the service industry. It could be, working for a restaurant. It might be working at one of the local hospitals, any number of things, in manufacturing, working for hotels, working for grocery stores and things like that. And so many good things happen, when folks who arrived as refugees start their jobs. So for children, the integration really starts at school. So when they start school, they're learning about, culture as new Americans in Missoula. They're learning the language. And the same thing for adults happens at work. They're become friends with the people who might be on a manufacturing line with them, or who might be stocking groceries alongside of them. In addition to putting sort of money in their pocket and then beginning to pay taxes and to contribute to our economy, they're again, learning the language, making friends, and otherwise beginning to integrate into their new community.
That's just wonderful to hear. I know in Bozeman, we need to work on getting some refugees here. We needed a car repair, and the first time they could take us in was in a month, and another car repair was 3 months, and they always tell us we just don't have the people right now to do that. And the same with some of our favorite restaurants have closed because they simply don't have the workers. So what this is contributing is pure gold to our workforce right now that is sadly and badly depleted across Montana.
Oh, no question. We've been contacted by various businesses saying, hey, do you have any refugees you can send us? Because we need help. We got contacted by a hotel looking for staff. We got contacted by some manufacturing folks. Ag is always looking for labor. So, yeah, there's work to be done.
Well, it's such a positive outcome because so many of the people coming, what their goals are is to get a job and settle in and become regular citizens.
I wanted to ask you, do you guys stay out of the political football that immigration or refugee acceptance has gone, or is that something that you guys try to stay on top of or away from? How do you deal with it?
Yeah, well, we certainly follow it, and we advocate for pro-refugee, pro-immigrant policies and things like that. But again, we're focused in our office, and that's sort of done at the IRC or the International Rescue Committee is a very large organization. So that's done. We have staff in New York and Washington D.C. who are working on those efforts. So yes, we're always advocating, working with our the federal funders that provide funds that at least get us started in the resettlement process. and constantly working to encourage this. And one of the reasons I cited that Congressional Budget Office number is, you know, there's, you know, if we stop immigration, you know, it's really going to hurt. And, you know, there was sort of through the pandemic and some immigration policy under the Trump administration, immigration slowed down significantly. And we're still, you know, recovering from that. And again, communities like Bozeman, I remember driving through at 9 o'clock at night on a Friday and thinking, oh, I need to get a bite to eat. And all the restaurants were closed because they didn't have staff. And again, that's what, again, immigrants and refugees replenish our workflow, workforce. So it's a much needed thing. And unfortunately, it's become this political kind of football that no one can get their hands on or is willing to get their hands on. So, yeah, it's really, really important that that we vouch for this. And again, one reason to do it is just the impact on our economy. And there are many, many other reasons to do it. But, you know, when we're talking about the politics of things, that's a really, really important point, I think, to raise.
And yeah. Can I add something to that, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, just the IRC, you know, there's an office in Missoula. It's a big organization, and we have just a strong history of being a nonpartisan organization. And so I think, too, as we all are eyeballing, you know, upcoming election season and whatnot, you know, some of our efforts are going to be focused on really trying to build connections with members of all parties and helping to educate people on the importance of our work and that it benefits the people that we're serving and it benefits us as a country.
And back to Eamon's comments about the number of refugees, I was noticing that President Ronald Reagan, and it's the president who determines how many can come in, and his ceiling was 140,000 new refugees. President Barack Obama had 110,000. While President Trump was in office, he allowed only 15,000 per year. And recently, President Biden signed a presidential determination to go back up to 62,500. So that varies so widely. And again, that could be a political reason. So I guess we need to be aware of politics in this whole situation.
Yeah, and I think you do. However, it's been, as you just referenced, historically, it's been the refugee resettlement process and program has had bipartisan support. Again, there was, again, the president sets what's called a ceiling for the amount, kind of the amount of refugees that the country hopes to welcome each year. And historically, from sort of at its height, was under the Reagan administration, again, when a lot of folks were being resettled after the conflict in Vietnam and Southeast Asia. Through the Obama administration, it was consistently around 95,000 through various administrations, both Republican and Democratic. And then you saw a precipitous drop under the Trump administration. But that number is going back up. And again, the admittance levels that we're hoping to get to this year are 125,000.
Oh, good. That's even more. You know, I think some people have a certain reluctance about having refugees come because in their thoughts, they don't know this person. They don't know what this person's outlook is. And they're fearful. So I thought maybe it might be of interest if you could talk about how refugees are selected? What is your process? I know that every refugee is hand-selected by the Department of Homeland Security and screened in exhaustive processes through security agencies. But could you tell us a little bit more about how one gets to be a refugee and how stringent that might be?
Yeah. So the refugee process, admittance process in the United States, there's several levels to this. So at the international level, it's managed by the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. And then at the national level, the federal level, it's managed by the State Department. And then there's another agency in the Department of Health and Human Services called the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And then the third level is resettlement agencies. So there are 10 organizations in the United States right now that are, again, as Sarah mentioned, have agreements with the State Department to resettle refugees. So it's a pretty complicated process. Another number that Sarah mentioned was that there are over 120 million and growing displaced people in the world right now, which is the highest number in human history. The other time that things were at this level was after the Second World War. And that's when a lot of sort of that, what I just described to you, the United Nations involvement federally and that's when sort of the processes that we work under now began to be developed. Basically, of that 120-plus million displaced people, about 38 million of them have been designated as refugees by the United Nations. A refugee in almost every case has to flee their country of origin and go to a second country. And it's when they're in that second country where they declare their refugee status or apply for refugee status. And again, that's administered by the United Nations. So many refugees end up remaining in that second country. Less than 1% of all the refugees in the world are actually end up being resettled. They may be resettled in the United States or there are about 20 countries around the world that welcome refugees, including both of our neighbors, Mexico and Canada, several European countries, I believe Australia and New Zealand, Japan, and Asia are all countries that receive or resettle refugees. To make a long story short, it's quite a journey. So for someone to, again, have to flee their country, declare that they are or apply for refugee status, only a very, very few of those who are refugees around the world actually are resettled, which is, again, those are the folks that we're receiving and welcoming to our community in the United States.
Excellent.
If you look at the 120 million that have been displaced, how do the countries rank on that? Where do most of them come from, like the largest number? And I realize with the problems in the Middle East right now, that's changing too, things. But before that event, how would the ranking of the most displaced folks, where do they come from?
You know, I saw a figure because I was actually just looking at this recently on the UNHCR website, which I don't have right in front of me, unfortunately, but it was something like 53% of all displaced persons are coming from three countries. So I think Syria was one of those countries. Ukraine was one of those countries. And I honestly can't, I am blanking on the third. I'm so sorry. If somebody has a computer in front of them,
that's okay.
Look it up. But yeah, it's, you know, people are coming from a lot of countries, but the majority of them are made up from these three countries.
What about Africa? Is that on the list?
Yeah, so certainly there are several countries in Africa that are on the list. I know the Democratic Republic of the Congo ranks highly on the list. There are also countries in our hemisphere that have, I know, and this might very well be the third country that Sarah was referring to, is in our hemisphere, and is the country of Venezuela. And I know they've had over 6 million displaced Venezuelans, you know, within the last few years. Yeah, another really important reason for the United States to support refugees, not only through its resettlement program, but around the world, is sort of diplomatically supporting countries that actually bear a lot more of the burden of, again, taking care of and receiving displaced people in the world. So there are certain countries around the world. One of them I know is Lebanon, where one in four people there are that live in Lebanon are displaced people. So they might be refugees. They might. They may not be, but they've been displaced. A country like, and again, in our hemisphere, I mentioned Venezuela. Well, many of them have gone to Colombia, and Colombia has done a monumentally heavy lift in integrating, welcoming all of those Venezuelans there. So it's important that we, you know, we lift those countries that are doing so much, again, of this work themselves, of, again, welcoming displaced people. That's a critical aspect of again, responding to this one of our human conditions right now, which is, again, displacement. So looking at those countries, looking to support Colombia, Uganda, and Africa, which receives, refugees and displaced people from many of its neighbors. Thailand in Asia receives many, many folks from Myanmar. Places like Pakistan has received many, many Afghans who are fleeing, and they're now beginning to struggle with that. It's a really, really complicated thing with many, many, countries involved and pieces and reasons for displacement. It's one of our big challenges. Right up there with some of our other humanitarian challenges.
And you know, I think that many Americans like myself tend to think that we're doing the most in the world to help with the refugee crisis. But one of your recent IRC publications points out that currently the world's poorest countries host the majority of the world's refugees. 85%
exactly.
Mm-hmm. are hosted in middle and low-income countries that are likely already impacted by acute food insecurity and malnutrition. So it's even in our strategic interests abroad to help these nations, as you were pointing out, who are struggling with trying to take care of these 120 million people who have nowhere to go.
Yeah, in terms of ranking internationally, the U.S. is 18th in terms of receiving refugees, right behind Cameroon.
Boy,
we're not pulling our weight.
We had an interview on this program with a wonderful person, the mayor of Helena, who came to us from Africa and as a refugee. And he's made a wonderful impact, and his family, on that whole community. But he was able to just step in and accommodate. Maybe you could talk with us about the psychological impact for these refugees and how you see them responding to this great challenge to enter a new culture, a new place, a new life, and adapt. How difficult is it for these refugees?
Yeah, so it's it varies quite a bit. They're all unique human beings. So some it's pretty remarkable. They pick up and go really, really quickly, and others may not do that as quickly. And there are all kinds of things I mentioned. Again, for children, and children are especially remarkable how quickly they pick things up, including the language, and everything. In terms of, you have to understand again, the length of the journey they've gone on to arrive at, Missoula International Airport, or soon at the Billings Airport. It's sometimes can be over a decade long, 15 years from when they fled their home country. They've started a new life in a place like Jordan or Lebanon or Uganda or Kenya. Maybe they've started a new career there. Or they might be in what we call refugee camps. So suddenly they go through this process, and you alluded to this earlier, Suzanne, but where they go through a years long sort of vetting process, where they go through medical examinations, security vetting, multiple interviews and things like that with different security agencies in the United States. Then it's time for them to be resettled. I don't know exactly how this happens, but they will be notified that they're going to be resettled in Montana. They prepare for that. And then there's a long, oftentimes a very long plane journey to get here. Suddenly, if you arrive in the winter months, you arrive to probably a winter that you may unlike anything you've ever seen, are beginning a brand new life in a very, very different place. And then think of all of the things that we sort of take for granted, from how to open a bank account, how to go to the doctors, how to enroll in school, all of these things that, we're accustomed to. Well, those are all brand new for them. There's trauma upon trauma upon trauma in sort of arriving here, and then challenge upon challenge upon challenge. So you can imagine the impact that's going to have on someone. One thing that is that inspires me certainly is how resilient our fellow human beings are. It's pretty remarkable that they are able to manage again all of these challenges and that long journey that includes many, many traumatic events and just challenges.
Are there any? Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say it. I'd also like to add that our country, it's a very individualistic society. And a lot of the people that are coming here as refugees come from very collectivist societies where everybody's sort of pitching in with child rearing and that sort of thing. And so that can be really isolating for people, and they can feel isolated, and that can just, you know, compound upon everything that Eamon has mentioned. And so the work that Soft Landing does, a lot of their youth programs, you know, they've got this awesome swim night that they organize, and it goes miles, I think, in helping people build that connection back up and have a sense of community with each other. And that's a huge piece, I think, in how people are sort of adjusting to a very stark contrast in our societal norms.
Of course, without using names, can you give one or two examples or more of success stories, if you will? I mean, it's successful, the very fact that they're here and they're safe and secure, but maybe certain educational goals or business formation, something like that?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Eamon. So there are so many of these things, and again, this is what's really inspires me to come to work every day. But are some of the success stories, you know, a couple of examples. We've been doing this work now for about 7.5 years. You know, we have families buying homes. And I don't need to tell you all in Bozeman, I know how challenging the housing market is there, but it's very, very challenging in Missoula right now, too. So, you know, that's pretty remarkable.
Absolutely.
And then we also have, kids who arrived here as refugees, going on to college, going to the University of Montana, the Missoula College. And I know we had, I think it was last year, we had a student enroll, and I think they're studying microbiology at MSU. You know, those are all signs of, again, really, really great things happening. And then I think in the introduction, you mentioned the entrepreneurial spirit of, again, those who arrive to the U.S. and to our communities as refugees. And there are examples of that, too. We have a restaurant that started off as a food truck that would, you know, show up at the farmer's market and things, that opened about 1.5 years, maybe 2 years ago. And they seem to be thriving. And they're next opening up a halal grocery store. Those are just some of many examples of successes going on. Another thing that's really really fun to see and learn about is we've had folks at one of our two hospitals who have been named Employee of the Month. There was a bus system is called Mountain Line. We had one of the folks that we resettled was named the newcomer driver of the year for Mountain Line. So all of those neat things. And then lastly, I'll just mention that we now have many, many folks who, once they're here for 5 years, they can apply for naturalization, so for citizenship. I know, in a couple of weeks here, we have a citizen ceremony in Missoula. It moves around to different courthouses, the federal courthouses throughout the state. We're going to go see one of our clients be sworn in as a citizen. So all kinds of really great things happening for sure.
And I'll credit Mary with what I'm about to say next, because I heard her say this once and I thought it was really well put. But also acknowledging that, you know, the milestones are signs of success, and then the little baby steps in between also, because, you know, success can look different for everyone. So if a client or somebody who's arrived to Missoula as a refugee is you know, maybe come to our office by bus for the first time on their own, and they made it from point A to point B. That's a huge success, that the little baby steps too. So I just want to make sure when we talk about success that we're also giving a nod to the baby steps as well.
That's
absolutely
so,
and that's actually what we get to see every day, those little successes, which are equally, if not even more, inspiring and impressive.
And as an American, I don't know that I could go to New York City and figure out the subways, et cetera. And I can't imagine what it must be like for somebody from another nation with another language. So they're really a lot of courage, a lot of stamina that we're talking about here.
We have about 2 or 3 minutes. Can you all give maybe a summary and maybe again how to get in touch with you and anything you want to say?
I'll start out just by again thanking Bozeman and Gallatin County for again your huge contribution to the work that we're doing here in Missoula, and we're doing this in Helena as well. We've placed a couple of families through what's called a co-sponsor organization in Helena, and there's a family that's going to go to Helena here. I think either tomorrow or this weekend. And with them, they're going to travel with some of the kids, again, that were gathered by your generous community. So I first want to certainly thank you for all of your contributions to the work that we do here.
And I'll follow that up by, echoing what Eamon said. Thank you so incredibly much. I think I've said it to Marty in passing, but just so you can, from my mouth to the community of Bozeman and Gallatin County, we truly, the Welcome Kit Drive makes such a big difference. You know, when people arrive as refugees, there's a limited amount of financial support and assistance that comes with it. And the welcome kits save us so much time and funds, and allow those funds to be spent on things like putting down a security deposit or paying a month of rent. So really, truly, I can't imagine doing this without your support. So thank you. I would love to just have everyone, you know, if you want to stay in tune with what we're doing in Missoula, just follow us on Instagram. It's at IRC Missoula. And you'll get all of our updates and opportunities to pitch in and help.
And Marty, could you give us that website again?
GallatinRefugeeConnections.com, and it's .org rather, and it's probably easier just to search for us, because every time I look for it, I have to go mistype something. And I'd like to give a shout out to the many churches, businesses, and organizations that cooperate with us, that host our posters, that act as drop-off sites. Without them, we couldn't do this. And the list of drop-off sites is on our website, and I really want to thank those folks because they make it a lot easier for people to donate. But I'd also like to thank the many churches and organizations that we don't list that are working with us. There's over a dozen churches and half dozen businesses that are helping us out.
We'd like to thank all of you, IRC, all the work you're doing. As we reach the end of the program, we urge the Gallatin Valley and anybody else that's listening to KGVM.org on the internet to get a hold and provide any kind of help that they can. Thank you, IRC. Thank you, Gallatin Valley. We'll see you next week. Health and happiness.